塔利班进入喀布尔，在总统府谈判权力移交。加尼总统逃离阿富汗，美国撤离外交官。华裔作家塑造美国西部华人英雄，对今天的读者有什么意义？
各位观众大家好，我是卡拉，欢迎收看美国观察。塔利班进入喀布尔，阿富汗总统加尼此前已经离开阿富汗。拜登总统和国安团队周日举行了安全会议。布林肯国务卿表示，美国人员和阿富汗驻守的安全是第一要务。另外，纽约华裔作家发表长篇小说，塑造出一位美国西部传奇中罕见的华人英雄。这样的作品对今天的读者来说有什么特殊的意义？稍后我们一起来关注。美国观察的节目热线已经开通，欢迎您拨打0021-202-920-4990，给我们留言，与我们分享您对节目的看法，告诉我们您希望看到的节目内容。一起来关注今天的新闻。塔利班周日进入喀布尔，阿富汗总统加尼此前已经离开了阿富汗。美国总统拜登周日和国安团队讨论阿富汗局势。布林肯国务卿称，塔利班接管阿富汗和喀布尔即将陷落令人心痛。布林肯表示，美国人员和阿富汗驻守的安全是第一要务。美国三个步兵营的前沿部队约3000人星期五开始抵达喀布尔。美国总统拜登周六授权另外1000人的部队前往阿富汗。详细情况请美国之音白宫记者黄耀毅来介绍。耀毅，
我们刚刚讲到这个阿富汗总统加尼已经离开了阿富汗，那么离开了之后呢，他就在这个他的这个脸书上面发言，表示说呢，离开阿富汗是他一项艰难的决定。他说呢，他的选择是应该留下来面对想进入宫殿的这个塔利班的武装部队，还是离开我过去20年致力保护并且珍爱的心爱的国家。他说呢，但是塔利班的目标就是他，所以呢，这个会因此而发动攻击，为了避免血腥的暴力发生，所以他选择离开阿富汗。那么根据路透社的报道呢，阿富汗跟塔利班代表呢将会在卡达开会来商讨移交政权，而美国的官员呢也会前往参加。那么路透社这里也说呢，目前这个以美国人正在美国境内的这个学者，同时也是阿富汗的前内政部长贾拉利呢，他已经获邀来担任阿富汗临时政府的这个领袖。那么一位白宫的资深官员在这个星期天的下午告诉记者说呢，拜登总统跟哈里斯副总统今早已经跟国安团队进行了安全视讯的会议，听取美国公民从阿富汗撤出、特殊签证的申请者，还有其他阿富汗的盟友以及喀布尔的安全情况。白宫官员说呢，与会的官员包括了布林肯国务卿、国防部长奥斯汀、中情局局长伯恩斯、国家情报总监海恩斯、国安顾问沙利文、驻阿富汗大使威尔逊、阿富汗特使卡利扎德以及中央司令部的麦肯金将军等等。那其实塔利班说呢，他们已经控制了当地的机场，不过呢，一位的美国官员告诉美国之音的国防部的记者说，这个美国大使馆本身还有哈米德卡尔扎伊国际机场都是安全的。那么这位不愿意透露姓名的官员是告诉美国之音说呢，说美国的部队继续涌入，并且牢牢地控制住国际机场跟大使馆。那目前呢，大约有3000名的美军已经在上个星期五开始抵达了喀布尔。那白总统在8月14号星期六再下令增派1000名的美军到阿富汗来协助撤离的事宜，这也导致了这个拜登总统任内来增派的美军的人数达到了5000人。拜登总统在发出的声明当中说呢，他在就任的时候就已经承接了前总统特朗普与塔利班在2019年9月11号前夕在戴维营达成的要在2021年5月1号的撤军协议，而且在特朗普任内呢，当时的美军数量已经减到只剩下2500人。那特朗普总统之前曾经批评说呢，在继续阿富汗驻军是一个浪费。那布林肯国务卿呢，在这个8月10号星期天上午接受美国的媒体访问的时候，就表示说呢，20年前派遣美军到阿富汗是因为因应9/11的恐怖袭击事件。那么现在本拉登已经伏法，美军的任务已经完成， 要把责任转交到阿富汗人民的手中。那拜登总统则在四月的时候宣布，把五月一号的这个期限呢，特朗普总统设下期限延期到九月十一号，并且增派美军处理撤离的事宜。那目前呢，美国使馆的人员在星期天已经抵达机场。根据 CNN 引述国防部的官员所说呢，星期天已经有约五百名的美国使馆人员飞离了阿富汗。此外呢，还有四千名包括外交人员、工作人员、阿富汗当地的这个雇员，还有他们的家属，还在阿富汗的当地等待离开阿富汗。昨天呢，加拿大也宣布撤离使馆人员，挪威还有丹麦的使馆也关闭。英国则宣布将派遣六百名的英国军人前往阿富汗，协助撤离大约有三千名的英国的国民以及两千名曾经为英国军队服务的阿富汗人。而法国的军方呢，也派出了两架的军机，将在星期一到阿富汗撤离当地的法国侨民。而北约的官员也说，有几位的欧盟人员已经搬到了另外一个秘密的安全地点。而美国国会议员呢，也对现在阿富汗的最新局势发表了看法。共和党籍的麦考尔众议员在 CNN 上批评拜登政府是完全搞砸了，他们完全低估了塔利班的力量。而另外一位共和党众议员呢，众议院的军事委员会的成员利兹切尼则是在 ABC 的新闻网的节目上说，拜登总统跟特朗普总统两位都要为阿富汗现在的局势负责。而民主党籍的众议院的议长南希·佩洛西呢，则发表了一份声明，他赞扬拜登总统关于阿富汗问题声明明确的目的以及他所采取的行动，同时也警告塔利班，全世界都在关注他的行动。他说呢，我们对有关塔利班残暴对待所有阿富汗人，尤其是妇女跟女孩的报道呢，深感关切。而美国国际社会以及阿富汗政府必须竭尽全力来保护妇女以及女孩免受塔利班的不人道待遇。那拜登总统说呢，美国在这个阿富汗驻军二十年花费将近一兆美金，那么还经历过两位共和党、两位民主党的总统。他说呢，他绝对不会把这场战争延续到第五位美国总统。那拜登总统今年四月十五号在白宫宣布从阿富汗要撤军的时候呢，也特别强调说，美国必须要把资源还有力量用来对付中国，巩固美国的竞争力，应对来自越来越强势的中国的严峻挑战。他说呢，这个才是美国要来应对的未来的挑战。好了。
另外要义，有关于这个海地在周六发生了7.2级大地震，造成了至少数百人死亡、数千人受伤的消息，白宫方面有什么样的回应？
所以我们知道呢，在这个拜登总统在这个戴维营呢正在休假，不过呢，他唯一关注两件事情，一件就是阿富汗，另外一件就是海地。那么根据海地的这个方面呢，目前已经看到有724人死亡，有2800人受伤。那这个白宫的资深官员告诉记者们说呢，这个拜登总统跟哈里斯副总统在星期六的上午已经听取了国安顾问沙利文以及布林肯国务卿关于海地地震的简报，他也下令美国立即动员，并且责令美国的国际开发署的署长鲍尔来担任协助海地的总协调官，所以呢，对于海地的援助很快就会开始进行。好了，
好的，感谢耀义从白宫带来的消息。随着塔利班重新掌控阿富汗，他们在性别议题上极度保守的态度也让很多的阿富汗女性感到担忧。有学者认为，过去二十年来阿富汗妇女争取的权益保障很可能会付诸东流。
A lot of the constitutional gains that we had, even if they were not put in practice, we were able to, use them. As for example, if you cannot vote in the rural areas, you could have voted in the city. If you couldn't access the schools in rural areas, you could have accessed them in the city. These are something that makes me worried. The right to work. Majority of the Afghan women, they don't have, reliable source of income. Majority of them have some sort of work going on for them.And some of them have lost their husbands in war, either in the army side or the Taliban side, and they work. So I'm not sure how is that going to help them. The country is going to go back into poverty, into humanitarian crisis. That makes me very sad about it, because it's something that everyone foresaw and didn't try to make or answer the crisis that were coming ahead.
关于阿富汗的最新局势，请您随时关注美国之音网站和各大社交媒体平台。明天的美国观察节目也会深入讨论阿富汗局势的变化以及对美中关系的影响。
感谢致电美国之音美国观察的留言信箱，欢迎您对节目中的新闻事件和热点话题发表看法，请耐心等待提示音后留言。
纽约法拉盛长大的林文涛正在加州大学戴维斯分校念博士。25岁的他刚刚出版了自己的第一部英文长篇小说，叫做《著名的千宗罪》。书中塑造出一位美国西部传奇中罕见的华人英雄，而其对手因为种族偏见而蒙蔽双眼。剥削华工的铁路大亨、欺压华工的腐败执法者等，都相继成为他的复仇对象。今天我们就请美国之音记者方正一起来聊一聊这一部作品，还有它的意义。方正，给我们介绍一下，我们说到这个西部传奇的时候，可能更多想到的是一个美国风格，可能没有很深刻的印象说有什么重要的华人的角色。那么为什么这一次林文涛要把他的这个华人的主角放到一个西部的背景这样的环境里？
首先是这样说，就是美国的西部开发和与之相关的建构起来的一套叙事体系，不管是虚构的还是传奇的，在美国文化当中都占据着非常重要的部分，它是美国文化的非常有机的、非常有魅力的、非常有动感的一个部分。在美国的西部开发当中，其实华人是扮演着非常重要的角色。一个呢是那边的矿山的开发、矿藏的开发，包括金矿、银矿，尤其是铁路的修建。美国第一条横跨美洲大陆的铁路，在西线部分其实主要是华人承担的。华人在修建铁路的时候的高峰期工人的数量呢，可能是15,000到30,000之间，这是个巨大的数量。对美国的铁路建设、对美国经济开发、西部开发是起到了非常重要的作用的。当铁路修好以后呢，华人回到矿山，回到西部的各个小镇，然后由西逐渐向中间，向美国东岸逐渐延伸。其实整个的足迹是非常稳健的，贡献是非常突出的。但是在美国的西部叙事里头，华人的角色几乎是可以忽略的。所以在现在这个阶段，有一批新的华人艺术家，像林文涛这样的年轻一代，美国基本上是在美国长大的，按美国的艺术训练成长起来的故事讲述者，由他们来关注华人在美国西部开发当中的角色，讲述华人的故事，其实是非常有意义的。这是一种正本清源，是说让我们今天生活在美国的华人和亚裔更好的理解美国的来龙去脉，也更好的理解我们作为美国的少数族裔在美国社会发展当中的重要的贡献。
方正，还有30秒的时间啊，给我们解释，给我们讲一讲，对这部作品，对于今天的读者和今天的这个观众来说，有什么特别的意义？
就是西部片、西部文学，它是一个画本，是一个舞台。其实你有才华的艺术家，可以自由的发挥你的想象力、你的创作力，创造出很好的作品来。早些年，意大利的一位电影导演叫 Sergio Leone，他曾经把欧洲的风味加入到西部片里头，创造出来这个叫做spaghetti western 的这么一种风格，就是意大利面的风格。我想随着林文涛这样的艺术家们投入到华人在西部当中作用的故事讲述里头去以后，一定会有一种新的样子出来。比方说叫做
这一次林文涛应该算是给这个西部片加入了亚洲的风格。非常感谢方正给我们带来的深入报道。7月的中旬，林文涛和美国之音记者也一起在华盛顿度过了一个下午，去了一家有名的独立书店，还有国家植物园，也聊到了他的这部作品，一起来看一看。
I was telling my colleagues, I was like, I have a book that's being published soon, and then I heard that one of my other colleagues had said, oh, he's lying. That's my book over there. I'm just going to sign it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
We'll keep it.
Oh, really? Full bar?
Yeah.
Well, this is a very good idea.
We're spending all day here.
What's today, the what?
The 15th at 4 on the dot.
15. A little surprise.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. Thank you so much. I'm just going to, like, pop a squat tomorrow, where I'll be renting a car for an exorbitant price and driving back to New York City. But I'll put these back on the shelf. And for, I think, Asian American writers specifically, I think it is crucial to write about what you know. And I think that also includes the Asian American experience.
Okay.
All right. And since when did you like get interested in Western stories, and did you get some influence from like directors like Clint Eastwood?
I love Clint Eastwood films. I think I got interested in Westerns when I went to college in California, because I hadn't really seen the West until I went to college, like kind of on my own. I was telling my mom about this, and I was saying, oh, I had never been to the West until college. And she said, don't you remember we took you on that vacation when you were 5 or 4? And so the answer was no, I didn't remember that. But I got interested in Westerns when I went to college in California. I got a car for the first time, and so I was kind of driving around a lot.
Among like all the Western movies you have watched, have you seen any Chinese characters on the wanted list, or is Ming Su the first one?
I don't recall seeing a Western movie with a Chinese-American protagonist where he's the only protagonist. And I think I wanted to tell a story where it was just a Chinese-American main character, and that was the whole deal. And he got to live his own story.
And, like, how many people have Ming Su killed? And are those people he killed all villains that deserve death in American Western story standard?
I think that's an interesting question. I think by his own count, he's killed about 200, but that was his job. He worked for this crime boss in Sacramento, Silas Root, and he was trained to be a killer. So in a sense, I think he was only doing his job, and he didn't really think about whether or not they were villains or whether or not they deserved death. And I think that question of whether someone is a villain or whether someone can even deserve to die is something that Ming grapples with throughout the course of the novel, something that he kind of comes to reckon with.
In a few sentences, could you describe for us like what kind of person Ming Su is?
The real question is whether or not Ming feels that he is his own person. Because I think all of his actions are the result of obligations or things that he has to do. And I see this story, as he moves through the West, I see it as being a kind of a way for him to claim his own identity and for him to kind of work in and discover who he is and who he wants to be outside of all those obligations and things that he has to do.
And in order to make Ming the best shooter in American West, what kind of research have you made and how long does it take?
I spent about, I would say, probably 2 years on research, and that included a lot of, you know, like library time, like book stuff, just like reading about the history of it, as well as field work. So I drove back and forth east and west along the Interstate 80, which tracks the Transcontinental Railroad actually quite closely. And so I drove along that highway, and I stopped, and I took pictures, and I took notes. And I also tried to, one of the things that's great about our obsession with the Western as a country is that we preserve all of these artifacts from the West even now. So it was quite easy for me to find an exact replica of the gun that Ming uses, like for sale in a gift shop. And, you know, I played with it at the counter. I think it was $300. I didn't buy it. But I definitely played with it a lot. And I think that's one of the things that's great about writing a Western, is that we're so obsessed with that history, it becomes very easy to, you know, if you're doing research, it becomes very easy to actually go and participate in reenactments and recreations of that history to kind of find out what it was like.
Mm. And did you visit many places for this novel, maybe to places like Sacramento or like Promontory Point in Utah? And how was the experience like?
The locations are in western Utah, most in Nevada, and the Sierra Nevada Mountains in California. And I was actually out there a lot, kind of going back and forth. And it's such a crazy, magical place with the landscape and the geology. You feel like you are not really a part of kind of human history when you're in those landscapes. It feels like you're standing apart from all of that. Downtown Sacramento has this kind of area called Old Town, where a lot of the old buildings from that section have been preserved or kind of rebuilt. And there's also the California State Railroad Museum is in Old Town Sacramento. And I was there a lot looking at kind of their collection and their library.
About the achievements of the Chinese railroad workers at that time. And does that experience helps you in the creative process writing the novel?
Yeah, absolutely. The work that those men did is just unbelievable. They're, you know, on the summit, no electric lights. They're drilling these tunnels by hand, and some of them go on for 500 yards, the longest one. And so they have this kind of huge iron rod, you know, maybe like 8 pounds, and it's six to 8 feet long, and they have it, and it's about that wide. And then behind him are two men who are swinging hammers, and they're trying to hit the target that's that big with 10-pound sledgehammers. And they're doing this in almost total darkness. And so if you know, you can imagine holding that rod and just really, really hoping that your friends don't just miss the target and, like, smash your hands. And then after you drill this hole, which takes, you know, an hour or 2 hours, you fill it with black powder, you light a fuse, and then you have to run because it's about to explode. And they did that in, you know, in just crazy temperatures, like negative 30. The snow would get up to 40 feet high in a season. And so they were working in kind of totally shocking conditions for so long. And what their work did was it allowed America to become what it is today. They built this railroad that connected East and West, and, like, that is the start of this kind of American expansion that pushes westward from the East, and it allows for trade and commerce, and also allows for, like, the modern America that we think of today as being totally linked from coast to coast. That's because of this railroad. You should read everything that you can extensively. Stuff that you think is bad, you should read anyways and figure out why you think it's bad. Stuff that you think is good, you should read and figure out, like, how it's so good. And for, I think, Asian American writers specifically, I think it is crucial to write about what you know.
Minxu is probably the only Chinese American Western heroes that we have seen. What kind of role does his yellow face play?
That's an interesting question. I think he's born in America, and he doesn't speak any Chinese. And yet, as he moves through the story, all these people, you know, the rest of society is always there to remind him and to kind of tell him that he is Chinese, not Chinese American, but specifically Chinese. That he doesn't belong in this landscape, that he's not of the place. And yet, on the other hand, you know, he knows where to get water. He knows how the desert is navigated. He knows all of these really intimate details about this land. And yet, when he contacts society, he always gets back this kind of affirmation of his Chinese identity and not of his American identity. And I think that distinction, that his race is written on his face. You know, his race is visible, and that's the only thing that's visible about him, and he's kind of judged on that standard. He's marked as an other, even though he doesn't feel that. And so I think one of the things that comes up a lot is this tension between what he is perceived as being and what he feels that he is. And kind of bringing those two things together is one of the goals. All of the Chinese immigrants in the States are kind of blending together into one person. There's this racial epithet that's used to describe all of them in all the papers and the historical sources, that's John Chinaman, which is just to describe any Chinese person that shows up in any location. And it's because of this kind of flattening, this, you know, like they're interchangeable approach to Chinese Americans during that time, allows Ming to kind of hide in plain sight because he seems unremarkable. So because no one actually ever remembers him or, you know, thinks of him as an individual, he becomes actually a very effective killer. He actually ends up being able to hide amongst other Chinese Americans because he is viewed as so unremarkable and so non-distinct. My aim was to make a Western landscape where anything seems possible, where the real factual parts of it are so, I think, accurately researched, and the magic is so wild that when you combine them, the hope is that some of that realism from the historical research crosses over and makes that magic seem more plausible.
So in Ming Tzu's relationships, it's mostly with white women. Is there a reason why for that? And is it because during that time, probably there are like very rare Chinese women in the years?
Yeah, it's exactly that. So the first wave of Chinese immigration to the U.S. started in around 1850, and it was almost entirely Chinese men. And the idea was that they would come to America, make their fortunes by working for a couple of years, and then return to their hometowns rich men. In practice, that worked out for a few of them, but not for all of them. And if any Chinese immigrants here wanted to kind of, you know, if they wanted to start a family here, or if they wanted to do anything like that, they usually had to go outside of their local community because there were simply no Chinese women who had also immigrated here. I think the number was something like 10% or fewer of all the Chinese immigration to the States in the 19th century were Chinese women. And so these relationships between Chinese immigrant men and American white women actually were quite common during that time, which is, I think, an interesting fact that that doesn't really come up a lot in tellings of that history. When I was growing up, the only books that I encountered were books with white main characters or like white heroes. And so when I first started trying my hand at fiction writing, you know, in like high school, I was writing all these stories with white main characters, and I wasn't really getting anywhere. You know, I think I was trying to write an experience that I did not have.
Does your identity bear any similarities with Ming Tzu? And especially, how do you see yourself during this time when there are some debates on like stirring Chinese-American hatred floating in the country?
I've read this book before now, recent spike in anti-Asian hate crimes. But it's not as though anti-Asian sentiment disappeared totally and then kind of popped back into existence in the past 2 years. It's always there. It's always been there. Just in, I think, varying degrees of intensity. It's useful to think about what anti-Asian sentiment, anti-Asian racism looks like today, while also remembering the forms that it took when Asian immigrants first started coming to the United States. And I think it's helpful to realize that they have the same bones, that it hasn't changed much, because it reframes it as a problem that can't be solved by a return to normalcy. There's no pre-hate crime period that we can return to, because it's always been there. And so I think what it calls for is a kind of radical realignment of our priorities when it comes to people of color and how we treat them in this country.
What are some of your future plans? Do you plan on being a literature professor or like a writer? Or
so I am finishing up my PhD in English literature at the University of Davis. I say finishing up. I just finished up my second year, so I've got a long way to go. But I do. I would like to be a professor of English somewhere. You know, if they'll take me. And I would also like to keep writing. I'd like to do both things. I think it's interesting to both write books and then think about them critically. And it definitely is a real mind bender to do them at the same time. But yeah, you know, for my future plans, at least for the near future, it's just, you know, finishing up grad school, finishing up my second book, and it's not a Western, it's science fiction, but it is going to have a Chinese American main character. I think all my books are going to have a Chinese American main character, because I'm Chinese American.
以上就是今天美国观察的全部内容，感谢您的收看，我们明天再见。